Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of SFP Now, a part of the League of Geeks network. And yeah, it's all officially working now on League of Geeks. So if you haven't checked it out already, go to the League of Geeks page here on Blog Talk Radio and have a look-see. Our interview tonight is with Madeline Patson, the director of the fantastic film Blood Punch. But before we get to that, Rais is joining me as always to go over some of the week's genre news. Welcome to the show, Rais.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. Well, okay, get straight into the news because I've got quite a bit to get through. The first bit of news I've got is apparently Star Wars composer John Williams has been awarded the AFI Lifetime Achievement Award. He's won 5 Oscars, 3 Golden Globe Awards, 5 BAFTAs and 22 Grammy Awards for his work. John Williams will be the recipient of the American Film Institute Lifetime Achievement Award, the first for a composer. Williams has written the scores for some of the biggest films and has been nominated for 49 Academy Awards for his efforts. He went on to win 5. The first was for Fiddler on the Roof in 1971, followed by Jaws, Star Wars franchise, E.T. and Schindler's List. He's also received 3 Golden Globe Awards, 5 BAFTAs and 22 Grammy Awards for his work. The 83-year-old also composed and conducted the first 3 Harry Potter films, Hook, Angela's Ashes, Lincoln and the Book Thief, among numerous others. John Williams has written the soundtrack of our lives, said Howard Stringer, chair of the AFI's Board of Trustees, in a statement. Note by note, through chord and chorus, his genius for marrying music with movies has elevated the art form to symphonic levels and inspired generations of audiences to be enriched by the magic of the movies. He'll be composing the soundtrack to Star Wars The Force Awakens, which is set to be released on the day the movie opens, which is December 18th. So that's, you know, congratulations to John Williams there.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. But maybe you got some big Finnish news.
Oh, yes. The rollout of box sets around characters introduced in Modern Who continues. They're going to be doing War Doctor stories with John Hurt. They've actually got John Hurt. And the press release says as follows. In December 2015, the time war will rage and only one man can save us. John Hurt is the War Doctor. John Hurt, the world-renowned star of film and television, is returning to the role of the War Doctor in 12 full-cast Doctor Who audio plays. The War Doctor was introduced for Doctor Who's 50th anniversary and played a key part in the record-breaking television special, The Day of the Doctor, alongside David Tennant and Matt Smith. He is a secret incarnation of the Time Lord, but he has shunned the title Doctor in order to fight the Time War against the Daleks. I've been a huge fan of John since first seeing him in repeats of I, Claudius in the 1980s and then his Oscar-nominated role as the Epidanus, the Elephant Man, his Big Finish executive producer, Jason Hay-Gillery. Watching his performance in The Day of the Doctor did find myself fantasizing that someday far off we might have the chance to work with him.
Cool.
On the audio adventures of Doctor Who, and now 2 short years later, it's happened. John wove a fantastic character together from a great script by Stephen Moffat. Now we have the chance to get to know the character more and hear John stretch in the role. We're in for a hell of a ride as the War Doctor engages in battle. But who's the greater threat? The Daleks or the Time Lords? The audio adventures of the War Doctor will be told over 4 box sets, each containing 3 linked hour-long episodes. The first box set is entitled Only the Monstrous and is written and directed by Nicholas Briggs, whose many successes for Big Finish include the BBC audio award-winning masterpiece Doctor Who Dark Eyes. It goes on for a while here. They go on at length about this whole project, but it's rather wonderful, and I'm looking forward to it.
I believe there's actually another one coming out in November which I spotted, and it's Paul McGann. I don't think they've publicised it properly on the site yet, but it's basically
No,
a prelude to the War Doctor with Paul McGann.
That'll be cool. That'll be cool.
But I noticed that on their Facebook page after you posted that on Tuesday. It might be something else completely, but it kind of looked, the cover art that they were touting looked very similar to what was on the War Doctor one. So it's hard to tell. Anyway, moving on, we'll stick with Doctor Who for a while, because basically it is an article here that I found on Digital Spy, which is asking the rhetorical question, who is Patrick Ness? Well, apparently, as we've all learned, Patrick Ness is the writer of the new Doctor Who spin-off series, Class. And they've gone on to say, he's awesome and here's why. Taking the prize for the biggest surprise of last week has to be the announcement of the new Doctor Who spin-off, Class. Heading up the all-ages show, set in the halls of Coal Hill School, is award-winning writer Patrick Ness. But who is he and what can we expect? After all, Ness has written adult novels, but he's mainly known for his young adult books, particularly 2008's The Knife of Never Letting Go, first book in the Chaos Walking trilogy, and 2011's A Monster Calls. And yet, we couldn't be happier to have him working on Class, and here's why. His villains are fascinating and terrifying. Take Mayor Prentice, the antagonist of Chaos Walking. He's one of the most genuinely terrifying villains who ever twirled a moustache. Not that the mayor would ever do anything so gauche as moustache twirling. At no point is there ever any question that he's anything other than a genocidal control freak. But he's also sick, and you find yourself wanting to both trust him and run away, screaming. Class needs more than the usual parade of Cybermen and Daleks, and Ness is the man for the job. And he's also pretty great at writing young characters, too. Ness's fifth Doctor starring Tip of the Tongue short was one of the 12 stories released in 2013 to celebrate Doctor Who's 50th anniversary. It placed him in good company among big names such as Neil Gaiman, Holly Black and Mallory Blackman, as well as giving us some solid evidence that he probably knows his way around the TARDIS. He'll tackle big, interesting and challenging topics. The best young fiction is the kind that really gets to grips with the day-to-day issues that plague everyone. And Ness is definitely up among the best. Chaos Walking deals with, among other things, modern-day information overload, albeit in the form of a virus on a distant alien world. And 2013's more than this confronts death and the poisonous power of guilt. It goes on, but basically, this just gives us an idea of what we can expect.
Sounds good.
It does.
Sounds like a good watch. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually got that Short Trips thing as well. I got the audio version.
Oh, neat.
And it was pretty good. I believe you got some DC stuff.
Yes. The first thing is that the Flash movie, as opposed to the TV show, the one with Ezra Miller, has finally found a writer-director. And it's no less than Seth Graham Smith, the best-selling author of Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, and Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, both of which I enjoyed in book form. So this should be interesting. This should be very interesting. He'll be both writing and directing.
And as a little tie-in, the trailer of Pride, Prejudice and Zombies came out today for the movie version.
It looks awesome.
It does. I mean, I really enjoyed the Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter film, which I've got on DVD back here. So I'm kind of looking forward to Pride, Prejudice and Zombies.
Yeah. Arguably, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies is a little bit better in terms of the the degree of melding the horror elements with the classic lit or the history, but both are very good. And Seth Graham Smith is obviously very good at, because he's chosen existing history and existing literature, he's proven himself as being adept at adapting canon. So he's good at adapting material that was already there, which makes him optimum for something like The Flash.
Yeah. Well, there's another book that came out that I don't think he did it. It might have been someone else, but they did bring one out called Queen Victoria, Vampire Hunter.
I think that was somebody else, yeah.
But, yeah, I'm just waiting for them to adapt that.
The other bit of Marvel news that I have that I'll be publishing in my next DC Roundup this Sunday after New York Comic Con is completed is that Scott Rudin is to produce dun-dun-dun Justice League Dark with plans to shoot in 2016. The project is no longer dead in the water.
And to lend some extra authenticity to it, they're going to shoot it in the dark.
The tracking board notice says, despite the departure of Guillermo del Toro, now apparent that Justice League Dark adaptation, otherwise known as Dark Universe, is moving forward under the guide of Scott Rudin. Del Toro is still staying on as producer, although he's no longer going to direct.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
that should be
cool. I've got two more little bits of news here. The first of which, Paramount is testing YouTube waters with Three Movie Channel. The only catch is that you have to be based in the US to watch it. Paramount Pictures is dipping its toes in the YouTube pond by launching a channel with hundreds of free movies on the video service. Hundreds of films for free sounds like a sweet deal. So what's the catch? Unfortunately, there's more than one. Not only do you have to be based in the US to access the Paramount Vault playback is limited to 480p. That's barely higher than VHS quality. And while we're on the subject of quality, many of the movies are bargain bin fodder, like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 and American Ninja 2, The Confrontation. At the more watchable end of the scale, there's Masters of the Universe, Dark City, and Jack Nicholson's fronted Ironweed. No need to cancel that Netflix subscription just yet. It will be interesting to see where Paramount takes this deal in the future. Well, probably going to start charging at some point.
Yeah. And they'll have to broaden the selection, because that's not going to be enough to...
Yeah, they also have to make it available in the UK.
Yes, that too.
And quit fooling around with region encoding. I hate it when people do that. I mean, the Sci-Fi Channel and all the networks do it on video trailers for upcoming TV shows. And I just think it's ridiculous.
It is. No. If we're a global society, we need to start acting like it on a certain level.
Well, that's the thing. They only started doing this a couple of years ago. Before that, all the trainers would be available for everyone to watch, irrespective of where they were. So it's just sort of like it's just really weird how they're sort of doing it. But basically, I guess it's a big corporation wanting to milk every last dime sort of thing. And they're thinking they're losing money by showing these trailers to the whole wide world. I don't know. Anyway, talking of Netflix, bad news for you guys in North America, unfortunately, because the prices are going to go up. You have to pay a bit more for Daredevil and House of Cards if you're in the US. Netflix subscribers in the US, Canada, and Latin America are facing a price hike if they want to keep tabs on Daredevil and House of Cards, and of course, aka Jessica Jones.
Yes.
The streaming giant announced this week that new customers in the aforementioned regions will now have to pay $9.99 per month, which is up $1 for the multi-screen standard HD plan. Existing customers will maintain their $8.99 per month rate for the next year, at which time their fee will also increase. Netflix announced this week on November 8th that they'll continue adding more TV shows and movies, including many Netflix original titles. We are modestly raising the price for some new members in the US. As a thank you to the existing Netflix members who aren't already benefiting from grandfathering, we will maintain their current price for a year. Netflix has several high-profile programs set to debut in the next few months, including Marvel's Jessica Jones and Luke Cage, sketch comedy show with Bob and David and Degrassi Next Class, and also coming up later this year is the second season of Marco Polo on Netflix. So, you know, that's really good news. New seasons of Daredevil, House of Cards, Bloodline, Orange is the New Black, and Arrested Development are also on the way, as are original movies starring Adam Sandler, Pee Wee Herman, and Idris Elba. So, yeah, it's that's it for the news. Unless you have anything else.
Nope, that's it. You've covered it.
Okay. Well. Thanks for joining us for the news release. And now it's time for our interview with Madeline Patson, who's the director and one of the writers behind the movie Blood Punch, which is due out on DVD pretty soon. Blood Punch is basically it's kind of like a horror film. It kind of mixes and matches lots of different genres. And it's basically, it starts out as a dangerous love triangle between three people that are involved in the crystal meth trade. And it goes from bad to worse. It's quite a funny movie. So without further ado, here's the interview.
So they tell me you're really smart, Milton. Chemical engineering degree, something like that?
Something like that.
I need to find someone who can cook high-grade crank, and I need to find them fast. One day, and one day only. That's it. You're set for life.
But you know what I can't do? What I absolutely cannot risk is you falling in love with her.
Russell is dangerous. A pure, 100% psychopath. I'll never get away from him. Not alive, anyway. Well, we've now killed my psychotic ex-boyfriend 3 times, and it would appear that he won't stay dead.
Is the universe giving us a cosmic test, or am I just going crazy?
I told you, we did this all yesterday.
You can't go on like this, Milton. Something has to be done. Well, there must be 10,000 different ways to kill somebody in this place. Let's just try every single one of them and see what happens.
No, there has to be another way.
You can't reason with him. He's a psychopathic maniac.
I think you're right.
I'd like to welcome Madeline Patson to the show. Who's been involved in a great movie that's like been doing around in recent years called Blood Punch. How you doing, Madeline? And welcome to the show.
Great! It's so great to be here. Thanks so much.
Oh, it's great having you. It's gonna be an interesting talking to you. I think. I think the first question I have for you is, how did you get into the world of writing and directing? Was it always your plan?
Well. First of all, my main job is I'm a cartoon writer. I write stuff for kids, right? So, but it turns out, and I went to film school because I loved movies. I went to college and went to film school, and I did love writing too, and I decided I would more follow the writing track because film production is very exhausting, you know, and I thought, all right, I'm going to do something that's a little more life-friendly, I guess, and so I fell into writing cartoons. But always wanted to make a movie. So when the opportunity finally presented itself, you know, always sort of played with the idea of making movies. But back in, that was before digital became a thing you could actually do.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was shot on film, and it was so prohibitively expensive that, Eddie Gazellian, the screenwriter of Blood Punch, and I have talked about making a movie for years, and finally we did it.
Cool. Well, on the subject of kids' television, I noticed that you've worked on the Tarzan animated series.
Yes, I did.
And as a fan of Tarzan generally, which includes the feature films and TV shows, I'm wondering if you can ever see a time where we could get an updated version of the character, returning as a mainstream TV show, in the current climate.
Tarzan is a great character, and working on this, I had never read the novel until I started working on the series. And what a great character. I would love to see a series. Now, are you talking about a live-action series or an animated series? Because
I'd love to see a decent live-action series come back, because they've had quite a few over the years. You know, in the 90s, they had the one with Joe Lara. In the 70s, we had Ron Eli. And, you know, there's been all sorts of live-action, but there's not really been one in this last decade that's really taken hold. They did one in 2003-04 maybe, where it's Tarzan in New York.
Yeah, Tarzan, because it's such a physical character, the physical part of the character is so difficult for a human to pull off. It lended itself to animation very well. But I agree, it'd be great to see a live-action Tarzan. And, you know, there's a city here not far from where I live called Tarzana, which is named after Tarzan because that is where Edgar Rice Burroughs wrote the novels. And that's where we actually got to go to his estate, what's left of it anyway, and check that out. And that was very special. And it would be awesome to have a live-action Tarzan.
Well, the reason that question was on my mind in so many ways is because I've just recently read the Andy Biggs novels of Tarzan, which are basically for younger readers. But, you know, he's done a pretty good job of updating the Burroughs character and actually setting it all in the 21st century and dealing with 21st century issues to do with the environment within the context of his novels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which was good. And I'd kind of like to see something like that on television. Although, I also like, you know, in the Edgar Rice Burroughs, the sort of like supernatural elements and the sci-fi elements that were there with the character as well.
Yeah, because he went to a lot of interesting places. And we were able to do that in a cartoon because it's a cartoon, you know. It's easier to have dinosaurs and whatnot in a cartoon.
Well, as far as I can tell, your directorial debut, Blood Punch, is probably the most adult-targeted thing you've done today. How did you find the transition going from kids' television to something as dark-humoured and adult-centric as Blood Punch?
You know, at the end of the day, storytelling is storytelling, which I was pretty surprised. And it's quite helpful in a lot of ways also, in that when you write, at least specifically cartoons, your characters have to have very specific character traits, which they can't just kind of meld into each other. And Blood Punch, you know, we pretty much try to do the same thing, where the characters are very specific character types and have their special, specific personalities, individual personalities. But yeah, I have to say, and, you know, also cartoon writing is, at the end of the day, it's pretty visual, even though you're writing a script. You have to still think of it in visual terms, which was really helpful when directing a movie. So it didn't feel like it was that different, frankly, except for the tone. Very inappropriate for families.
Yeah, the tone, I'm kind of looking forward to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles episode that features elements from Blood Punch. it'd be probably quite fun to watch. It's kind of funny because some of the subject matter of Blood Punch ties into this next question, and that is, in recent years we've seen a lot of TV and films that kind of explore both sides of the illegal recreational drugs argument. We've had shows such as Weeds, and most recently Breaking Bad. I'm just wondering, were either of those shows in any way an inspiration for some of the drug-related elements that you had going on in Blood Punch?
You know, it's hard for people to believe this, but we have a character named Skylar, who is a character named from Breaking Bad also, but it wasn't based on that character at all. It was kind of a coincidence, and when we first started putting together Blood Punch, Breaking Bad wasn't, I think it had just come out and nobody had really heard of it and we hadn't even seen it yet. But once it got big, there's a lot of stuff that was in the original Blood Punch script, which I pretty much said, you know, we could cut this because everybody knows this stuff from Breaking Bad already. They're already schooled in a lot of these technical meth-making things. So, you know, it made it easier to just trim a little dialogue of descriptions about stuff. So it was actually quite helpful in that way.
Yeah, the only trouble is with making meth in this country is the problem is trying to find a secluded cabin in the woods somewhere. because, you know, so the UK is so vastly populated, it'd just be difficult to do.
We have a lot of land here, so.
Yeah, I mean, I've come up with a diabolical scheme of building my own submarine and having a meth lab in that. You know, something like that.
That's a whole other movie right there.
You know, or maybe follow the James Bond playbook and build a secret base in the side of an active volcano or something.
That would be a great idea. Another great movie, actually.
Okay. Where did you get your ideas from for Blood Punch? Because it's, you know, there's a lot of pretty dark stuff in there. Some great visuals. A notable visual for me is the part where Milton is torturing Russell. But before digging in, you know, he pretty much shows him various twisted versions of shows Russell different scenarios of himself having been tortured. With the different sort of like poses, and I thought that was quite funny because it kind of put me in mind of a kids' TV show we have here in the UK in a sick, twisted sort of way. We've got a show called Blue Peter. It's like the longest running TV show, you know, kids' show here in the UK, and it's kind of like a magazine program, and they make stuff on it every week, and because they only have 25 minutes to fill, they'll go, well, here's one we made earlier. It kind of put me in mind of that.
Let me tell you, maybe running kids' TV shows sort of puts you in a little bit of a twisted place, you know? Maybe it's not that much of a coincidence that UK show is a little twisted. Going through those ideas specifically, in general, when we started the whole thing, we didn't start with a script or an idea for a movie. We had a general idea of someday we'd like to make a movie, but we had been, both of us, because I'm a cartoon writer and Eddie Gazalian, the screenwriter, is also a cartoon writer. Like, he wrote Winnie the Pooh stuff. So, there you go. Mm-hmm. But we both had worked on a season of Power Rangers. It was season 17, so it had been going on we didn't even realize it had been going on so long. But it was shot in New Zealand, so the cast was actors from New Zealand and Australia. And the actors were amazing. We just couldn't believe, you know, that they would be in such a small country and actually be so good. Because we had worked on live-action kids shows here, and it was difficult to find really good actors here in L.A., which is, you know, the acting capital of the world, I guess. Yeah. So we just wanted to do something with them. And so the three leads of Blood Punch, we've kept in touch with all of them pretty much. They're all pretty much family at this point. And we thought, well, let's make a movie with these three leads because, you know, we're doing it ourselves, entirely ourselves. So we don't have a huge budget. So it has to be limited characters, limited locations. And what can we do given our limitations? And the actors we thought could pull off what we wanted to put them through, essentially, as actors. So we thought there's two boys, and you know, two males and one female. That's a love triangle.
Uh-huh.
And so we think, well, we also love film noir a lot. So that was a big inspiration, is a very classical film noir love triangle. So we went down that road, and then we started just adding other genres that we liked, like black comedy and little supernatural elements and a good amount of violence. So really, it sort of started more with the actors than anything, deciding on using them, and then we eventually morphed it into this. And since we were so close to them, we talked through their characters a lot, and there was a lot of discussion about, like, for example, that scene that you're talking about, where he's essentially, what he's doing is torturing Russell.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at the beginning of the movie, he's not that person. He's a very different, more regular person. He's not completely well because he's in drug rehab, but he hasn't gotten to that casually easy, comfortable with casual violence place yet. And so that's essentially, but you know, you have to make it a little bit funny too, or it's so uncomfortable to watch. Mm-hmm. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I thought the actors were really, really good. I thought the guy that played Milton was absolutely fantastic, and he seems to be the character that's had the biggest journey in the film.
He's almost several different versions of the same person because, you know, he starts off, and we discuss this a lot with the characters, I mean the actors, their characters, because he starts off innocent, and then he slowly becomes less innocent, a lot less innocent, very comfortable with casual violence. And then, you know, I don't want to give away too many spoilers, but then he kind of goes back to being what he was at the beginning for plot reasons that I don't want to get into because they're too spoilery.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I thought the acting was really good. And Skyler, she's just sort of like the type of girl that you got to take home to mom. You know?
If you met her, you just wouldn't even believe what a sweet. I mean, she's adorable and sweet and nothing at all like Skyler.
Mm-hmm.
But she's just a tremendously fabulous actress.
Yeah. I just thought it was a really well-acted film, and I thought story-wise, there's a lot of great twists and turns in it that sort of like you just don't see them coming as a viewer.
Well, that's what we're going for. It's a little bit of a roller coaster ride, and you don't want it to be too predictable.
Yeah. As someone who's only actually really written until doing Blood Puncher, how much of a challenge was directing for you? And hindsight being what it is, do you think there's anything that you would have liked to have sort of like done a bit differently or spent a little bit more time on?
Well, I think hindsight really is always 20/20. For me, I've never directed a movie before, so this is a pretty big undertaking. I had studied filmmaking. I had watched a ton of movies, which I think is very, very helpful, believe it or not. And the actors actually had quite a lot of experience being on set. So they were a calming influence, believe it or not, because they were less newbies than we were as far as being on a movie set. They were very comfortable with it. We weren't. So we learned from them as much as anything. And I don't know, you know, there's just a million things. So much goes wrong. I think we were prepared that production is essentially a long Murphy's Law scenario where everything that can go wrong will, and it's just about how fast can you adapt to that and fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And we had that happen a lot from day one. I mean, from literally day one, where we had a snowstorm in the mountains in November, which typically doesn't get snowstorms up there, and our camera truck couldn't get up there. It was sliding around all over the place, and we went through lots of weather things, like a snowstorm, a sandstorm in the desert. Wow. We had a bomb scare. One of our actors ended up in the hospital on the day he was supposed to shoot. So, you know, what would I do differently? That's an excellent question. As far as production goes, I'm not sure. I think picking your crew is very important. We were lucky with our cast. Our cast were not divas at all. And we, for the most part, had a good crew, but you want people who are willing to go through that with you, especially when you're not really paying them very much.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's something for us to keep in mind for the future.
Yeah, you might want to consider sort of like building a weather machine or something.
If only, man, we'd be rich.
Yeah, you could sublet it to our different film crews around the world.
Dude, California, we could just have used it to keep it from being in a drought this whole time, this summer.
Damn. Yeah. When not working on television and film, what sort of television films do you most enjoy to watch as a viewer?
Yeah, I tend to like, as far as TV goes, anything that's about, usually an hour long, and you know, one of my favorite series actually was from you guys. It was Misfits.
Uh-huh.
I love that show so much. So anything that falls into anything with a bit of drama, a bit of a mashup of stuff, like a little action, a little drama, maybe a little sci-fi, and some comedy, for me, hits the sweet spot.
Yeah. I'm kind of the same, you know. I love my Doctor Who, but I kind of prefer the classic Doctor Who. I still like the new one, but I grew up with the classic, so, you know.
Right.
I still like have this analogy that the new show's just kind of like what like having pizza, because it's so quick and fast, and narratively it's, you know, it's like a sprint, whereas the old serials back in the 70s and 80s, they were done over, so like maybe 4 or 5 weeks and 25-minute segments sort of thing, and
right,
there was a cliffhanger at the end of each one. So, but yeah, I'm kind of the same. I like stuff like Supernatural. I enjoyed Misfits as well. So like, I've got a guilty pleasure for 80s TV, and this kind of leads into my next question, because something I enjoyed about Blood Punch was the fact that your characters were kind of like, breaking the third wall by narrating events of the plot in almost sort of like a Madden PI or MacGyver fashion. Whose idea was it to take that approach?
Well, actually, I would say if you know film noir pretty well, particularly very original classic film noir like Double Indemnity, the character essentially starts out narrating very similarly, not to himself, but he starts out telling the story to another character as a recording to another character. And so you could say we lifted that idea a bit, essentially, to wrap around as a storytelling device.
Yeah, it worked really, really well. you know, it's kind of a little bit disturbing where you had Russell, you know, where you hear the narration of Milton. And the next thing you see is sort of like a black and white shot of him, you know, stood by the bath with some of his fingers that have been sort of like chopped off.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that kind of really, really worked well. But you know, sort of like I know what you mean from film noir, because I think a lot of the Bogart movies used it as well.
Yes, it's possible. I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but you're probably right.
You know. But it's kind of like it's something I really like, you know, when it's done well in dramas, and I think you did it really well in Blood Punch.
Thank you so much.
What other projects would you like to work on in the future if you're given the chance to sort of like pursue other genres of film as a director or writer?
Well, that's a great question. Something I have no experience with, but it's something I love, is musicals. I don't want to think about music, and I don't know how to write music, but I do love a good musical. So that would be a bit of a stretch for me. You know, if I was just going to make something on my own, I'd probably stick closer to what I actually know, because, just, you know, it's hard enough as it is when you're doing it yourself. You might as well stick a little bit, something you're closer, you know a bit more. But I wouldn't discount doing something that I didn't know, because, you know, got to stretch.
Yeah, and you know, so we can, and I think Blood Punch for a first time director, you know, sort of like it's got a bit of every genre in there.
That's true. I mean, it's kind of a thing that I love, is anything that's sort of a mashup of different genres is usually has a special place in my heart. I don't know if you've ever seen this French film called Brotherhood of the Wolf, but it's French, you know, so it's foreign, and it's like a werewolf movie or monster movie,
uh-huh,
and a kung fu movie and a period drama all together. And I just love that movie, and I love just mixing stuff up like that.
I wonder if there'll be an English version of that movie or if it's dubbed, because I'm dyslexic, so I'd have trouble reading the subtitles and keeping up.
Yeah, see, I don't know. That movie's been around a few years now. Could be as many as 10. I'm not even sure. But, yeah, I've never heard of anybody talking about, you know what, there really needs to be a Brotherhood of the Wolf remake in English. Like they tend to do with a lot of, I guess they do that with TV shows more than, they did it with Girl with the Dragon Tattoo as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe I'll take on Brotherhood of the Wolf, the English version.
That'd be cool, because, you know, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, I think they did actually release them as dubbed versions of the original film, and they also did the original spoken version. I mean, you know, I kind of read the books, but it took me ages to read the books because of my dyslexia. It can take me about, you know, a month, maybe two, to get through a 600-page novel. You know.
Audio books, that's what I recommend.
Yeah, there is that, but I think you kind of lose something in translation because it's somebody else's, you know, perspective and audiobook.
Yeah, the narrator matters a lot for audiobooks.
Okay, well, given the actors that you had in Blood Punch, they're not really huge names as yet in the industry. Has the film helped any of them onto bigger roles?
Well, Milo Cawthorn, who plays Milton, was also in another horror movie. You know, they're from New Zealand, the three leads. And he's back in New Zealand, and he was in a movie called Deathgasm that will be, I think it's coming out at least in the U.S. in October. And he was also in New Zealand, they're shooting a series of The Evil Dead called Ash versus The Evil Dead.
Oh, right, yeah.
And he's in an episode of that, which I couldn't be happier about.
I'm still looking forward to that series.
I mean, the trailers makes it look phenomenal. You know, it's perfect. It's exactly in my wheelhouse. It's like horror and it's funny.
Yeah, I love the Evil Dead movies. You know, so I like the originals back in the 90s. But I even quite enjoyed the reboot that they did a couple of years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty good attempt. You know,
I'm so sorry for them, anybody trying to do a reboot of those, you know.
It was darker, it was sort of like, they tried to make it darker and scary, and a lot of the humor was gone. But,
right, I mean, that's kind of an issue for me, but like that RoboCop reboot, RoboCop is literally my number two favorite movie of all time, and, you know, you can't do a PG-13 version of RoboCop.
Yeah, you know, sort of like, I've seen the reboot, I still prefer the original.
Yeah, me too, by a long shot.
You know, and RoboCop 2 was hilarious, you know, with the kid. But, you know, this kid reminds me of my nephew. it's kind of realistic. Obviously, making, you know, such dark human film is going to be pretty tough for all concerned. Are there any funny stories or practical jokes from the production on the film that you could maybe talk about?
Funny stories. I mean, we were constantly just trying to get it made, and all our stories are possibly horrific and maybe funny in hindsight. Like, mm-hmm. You know, we had to evacuate because of a bomb scare. We were out in the desert, and there wasn't a military base out there, and I guess they had a bomb scare, and they just made us all leave. Bright and early, the cops are there telling us, you have to get out. There's bomb scare. Like, well, we got to film! Which at the time wasn't very funny, but it's funnier now.
Yeah, it's funny how that happens. You can have some quite, you know, horrible experiences going along in life, doing stuff, and when you look back on them, you know, sort of like the absurdity of them, just sort of like.
Yeah, I think all of it. You know, film production is sort of absurd. I think the whole thing is difficult and absurd and funny.
I remember going on a trip once with a sports club, and the lady that was driving the bus, we'd stopped off somewhere for some fish and chips because we were on our way home. We'd been driving for about 5 hours, and she left a handbrake while I was on a hill, and obviously because she left the handbrake on, we started rolling down this bloody hill. So it's like me and this other lady called Joanne who were on the bus. We sort of like darted to the front of the bus and sort of like had to sort of like slam the handbrake down to prevent us from going down, sort of thing. And there's another instance where she drove this minibus that we'd borrowed underneath a clearance that was too low for the bus, and part of the roof came off.
Oh, wow.
You know, so that, you know, I've had some, you know, quite funny experiences like that. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we were a small, because ultimately, as far as movie production goes, we're a pretty small group of people. And you know, you're a small group when sometimes extras in the background are actually your stars that are just not having to be shot that day. And sometimes, like, you know, there's a lot of dead bodies in the show, again, not to give away any spoilers, but there's shots where there's a bunch of dead bodies of the same character, and pretty much all of us had to fill in and be one of those bodies in costume because we just didn't have enough people.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you have to need something to react to, you know, and, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Kind of like the classic CGI thing. Well, you know, I'm just talking to a tennis ball on a stick at the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's kind of like that thing. It kind of amazes me that actors can actually do that and pull it off and keep a straight face.
I don't know how they do it. I really don't. I mean, I guess that they're actors and professionals and they got to do it. But sometimes you really can tell that they're just not reacting. They're pretending, but they're not really having to react to anything.
I think I'd be saying, it's a ball. What's my motivation? But yeah, it's been great speaking to you. Do you have any other projects lined up, or are you sort of like really busy promoting the DVD and the Blu-ray release?
Yeah, right now it's mostly doing promo and my day job as a cartoon writer, because that's why I pay bills, you know. Until this movie money starts flowing in. But yeah, we're always talking about what do we want to do next? And we floating around the ideas of another movie of our own, small, or maybe doing a series of some kind.
What about a web series?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is you can, that's what we play with, because nobody has to give you permission to do that. You know, you don't need to go to a studio and get money to do that, to have it air somewhere. Because anybody can put up a series online. I don't know how profitable that is, but it could be a lot of fun. So we're seriously considering anything like that.
Well, you know, I know people that do web series. A friend of mine, Mark Pyle, he's recently written a book about web series, kind of like a history of and how to go about setting one up sort of thing. And I was actually a producer on his web series. Although the funny thing is, I was in England and he was over there in sort of like Kentucky, sort of like with his cast and crew. So I basically sort of like I quarterbacked it from England, I guess.
you know. Dude, what's the name of the book, if you don't mind?
It's called Television on the Wild Wild Web: How to Blaze Your Own Trail, and it's by Mark H. Pyle.
Oh, great! I'll check it out.
Yeah, because he got that released last year, and I actually wrote a foreword for it. So,
oh, excellent.
Really,
I would love
cool
to read that as well.
But it's sort of like he did a web series called Reality on Demand, but you know, over the last couple of years, he's gotten to know quite a lot of people in the web series community, and he's been involved with the award ceremonies. He actually gave an award at one of the award ceremonies and such. So
yeah, that's really fascinating to me, all that stuff.
Well, it's kind of like I've got a feeling. I mean, it's already sort of taken over from mainstream television in a way, because like Netflix is producing its own stuff now, and Amazon, and you know, and I think that's kind of like the next evolution of television.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? But yeah, it's been great speaking to you. Really, best of luck with the DVD and Blu-ray release of the movie. I'm hoping it does really well for you.
Thank you so much. It's been great having this chat with you.
Came here and they spilled blood. So I figured that's what starts this whole cycle.
One of us is going to walk out of here with that knife.
Russell isn't smart enough to find a way out of this place. But you are.
You kill me, or I kill you.
Let's just say I'll see you in hell. Leave it at that.
Yeah, maybe I'll see you in hell. Or maybe I'll see you tomorrow.
And that was the director of Blood Punch, which is due out soon on DVD and Blu-ray over in the US. Just trying to find a date for it, for its release. In fact, it's actually out now on DVD and Blu-ray. And it's also, I think it's also available on Amazon Prime, so... it's worth checking out if you're into sort of like horror, or you're looking for something that's sort of like maybe a little bit different to the usual horror. Anyway, I'd like to thank everyone for listening. We'll be back at you again real soon. We have the Pandorica Opens coming up on Sunday night, which is which will sort of like focus on the recent two-part episode of Doctor Who. So you can join myself and Raisa for that, and that'll be on around about 6:30 Eastern Standard Time, I think. And we have another show next Friday. Also, I'd like to sort of remind you to check out some other great shows we have here on the League of Geeks. We've got Super Geeked Up, which is released every Thursday, I think. And we also have a Genretainment, which is usually out on Mondays. So, you know, you might want to check those other two shows out, as well as everything else we have to offer here on the League of Geeks. Thanks, as always, for listening. And we'll be back at you next time.